Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special edition on Easter weekend 2024. We've heard some World War II Passover stories over the years here too, but this year Passover doesn't fall until late April, so we're focusing on how World War II veterans experienced the final Easter of that global conflict. We've already heard from a couple men who came close to losing their lives in kamikaze attacks in the Battle of Okinawa, which started on Easter Sunday and lasted 82 days, claiming the lives of more than 12,000 Americans. But it wasn't a picnic in the European theater either. For an 18-year-old from Grand Rapids, Michigan, with the 86th Infantry Division named Bill Koning, it marked his first real combat experience.
I was the so-called first scout in the 3rd Squad of the 2nd Platoon of I Company of the 341st Regiment and 86th Infantry Division.
Uh-huh.
And so as first scouts, you're supposed to see them before they see you.
Yeah.
But landing in Le Havre, cold, we went to a bar on the Rhine River, and the whole group was, they just walk into these places and you take over. And so this bar had a beautiful patio out looking over the Rhine. There was a normal infantry squad had maybe, was supposed to be 12, we had maybe 10, 9 guys. Look out and see Germans on the other side, very small things going past on bicycles once in a while. And so we were just sitting there. And along about the 1st of April was Easter, and they asked for volunteers to a patrol to go across the Rhine River and pick up a person, find somebody that knew what outfit was over there. Now, why they had to know the name of the German outfit, I don't know, but we were supposed to get a German prisoner and bring him back with us.
That sounds like a pretty mundane mission. No big deal.
No big deal. You know, it starts at the battalion, it comes bouncing, and finally it's our platoon. The platoon leader volunteered for it. And so then it's now who in the platoon is going to go. And so they ask for volunteers, and my squad leader, who I admired very much, volunteered, so I volunteered. Jim Karakoff from Norfolk volunteered. He was our BAR man. And our assistant squad leader volunteered. So that was 1, 2, 3 out of that squad. And there was another one out of the 1st squad, just a regular infantryman, and another one out of the 3rd platoon who volunteered. And so you got the leadership of the 2nd platoon pretty well taken care of, at least the 3rd squad taken care of. And so there were like 5 of us infantrymen and 3 engineers. And I can remember standing on they had a boat ramp going down to the Rhine River, and stand there and look around. There's just a dozen, about 10 of us. And you think about that. Maybe I'm not coming back. That's when it hit me.
That's the first time you thought that?
Yeah.
I can see why.
It's the first exposure, really, to anything. And so it's the 1st of April, and it's Easter Sunday. So they say, let's go. And so we run down to the boat ramp, hop in the boat. Motor won't start. Quick, get the paddle. We get the paddles out, and we paddle across. Just before we get to the other side, a machine gun burst comes through the boat. I don't know how he missed as much as he did, but he did hit my squad leader. And I look down, and here's Cowboy Letro. Cowboy is his nickname. Lying in the bottom of the boat, his face all blood. And so we get to the other side, and we hop out. We run up the bank, and there was a big church wall. Oh, maybe 30 feet high, big church wall. And just as we get ready to go into the town, which was a little path going into the town, another burst of that machine gun comes through and takes out the assistant squad leader. And so now we've lost 2 already. And I quickly jumped into a hole that eddy that the spring thaw had made in the bottom there. And Kirchhoff, the BAR man, jumped right on top of me. He landed on my back. He said, "Oh, just like the best hotel in town." And so we're stuck in this little hole in the ground. And I'm looking right up a boat ramp into the town. So I stick my head up to see what's going to happen. And I fake a little ding on the top of my head. And the machine gunner's gone again. So I duck back down into the hole. And I pick up my gun, and I was using a friend's gun. It was a BAR, an automatic rifle. And I put it over the edge of the hole because I'm going to fight back. I pull the trigger, and it's supposed to go brrrr. It went pop. Dumb thing won't work. Mm-hmm. One shot at a time instead of automatic. So about this time, the lieutenant says, this isn't going to work. We better go back. So we jump up and go back. And so now we left one man there, the assistant squad leader. He was killed. And the rest of us run back in the boat, paddle back across the Rhine River. And when we land, then the Germans now have got big artillery. And boy, they start shooting at that spot where we landed. That's the first cannon exposure we had. And boy, he was accurate as all get out. Now, I don't know how much damage he did to anybody else, but our group survived. But it was just a real touch and go in their artillery like you wouldn't believe. So we knew what war was all about.
I guess so. I didn't want to interrupt you in any of that, but I do have a few questions. You say your assistant squad leader was killed, and it was your squad leader who was hit before that in the boat?
That's right.
But he survived?
Yes, he survived. The bullet went in his mouth. I saw him after the war. Took out two teeth, went all the way down his neck, through his shoulder, and they took it out of his arm where you have your, what they call them, angel wings or something.
Yeah.
Took it out way down in his, halfway to his elbow.
Wow.
He survived, became a refrigeration repairman in Tennessee.
Wow. But you're exposed right here. This is your first real taste of combat, and
yep,
you're already seeing one guy you said you really admired almost killed, another guy in your squad killed, and you mentioned a ding on top of your helmet. Now, that wasn't someone with a little mallet playing with you.
He was shooting at me.
That was a machine gun bullet,
yes,
that hit your helmet.
Yes.
But fortunately at the right angle that it didn't penetrate.
That far from the bottom of the helmet, so by 2 inches lower, he would add me.
But it didn't even, it just bounced right off.
Bounced off.
Is that something that got your attention at the time, or is that one that that night later on you're thinking, boy,
it got my attention. I kept my head down from then on.
Yeah, that's a little too close for comfort. So you guys had gone over to try to determine which German unit was there,
yeah,
grab a prisoner.
Yeah.
You realized, we're not going to get a prisoner. We got to get out of here or else we're going to be dead.
Yeah, the lieutenant realized that.
Uh-huh. And then when you got back to your side, their artillery was zeroed in on you. So what does that mean? Their shells going off right by you?
Yeah, they had us pretty well zeroed in. So you get down on the ground and you sweat it out. A friend, a guy from another part of the platoon, when we landed, we knew they could see we had a wounded person aboard. And so this, you're on the edge of a river now, and just up in the river there was a cultivated field, and we hollered for the medic. And the guy that the Jeep driver in our company came bouncing across the field, and it's under heavy fire now. He volunteered and came bouncing across that field to get to Cali, pick him up. And they, fortunately, they gave him a Silver Star for it.
Well, they should.
Yeah.
He risked his life to save another.
Yeah.
But I'm still thinking about you being a 19-year-old kid. You're keeping your head down. You're ducking. But there's nothing you can do to stop that artillery from hitting you. If it lands on you, you're gone.
You're done.
So what are you doing with your head down? Are your eyes closed? Are you saying a prayer? Are you just gritting your teeth? What are you doing?
I don't recall any particular thoughts other than get as low as you can get. You get everything but your heels and your helmet. I don't have any thought now. Later on, we had more exposure to that sort of thing and mortar fire and all that. And got caught once in the middle of the street. And this is, no, first off, I said my squad leader got hit and the assistant squad leader got killed. They suddenly made me the squad leader. And here's a 19-year-old kid, the squad leader. Never done anything like that before in my life. And I got 6-8 guys reporting to me.
Yeah.
Now, the group gets these 3 new people coming in, replacements, because we were down and we lost 2, and we were only about 8 to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3 are very, you remember them. One that was a 33-year-old Boston man, wife and 3 kids at home, and later on he got killed.
Mm.
One, he stuck real close to me all the time. And finally, one night, we were sitting outside somewhere on guard duty outside some farmhouse, black as night, couldn't see the end of your gun. And I felt him shaking. I said, "What's the matter, Pat?" He says, "I'm scared." I said, "Well, I am too." He said, "Yeah, but I'm only 15. And so Pat went home the next day.
You ratted him out, or he ratted himself out?
No, we ratted him out. We got rid of him quick.
Wow.
And everybody cooperated in getting rid of him because 15-year-old kid don't belong out there.
Yeah, and he had obviously lied
so
about his age.
So now that's another guy out of my group. So now I'm a squad leader that's supposed to have 12 people, and we got about 7 left now.
Oof.
And so from then on, when I talked to my friends, I still talked to one guy. we had it easy. We surely did. Our job was, occasionally we were in the front line, but it was never that much exposure. The war was just about over. It's the 1st of April, the war's over the 1st of May. So let's say we had 6 weeks of combat. Yeah, we walked and rode. We ride all night in trucks and walk all day. And we were cleaning out places. We were getting rid of people out of houses. We'd kick people out of houses because we didn't want to leave anybody behind us.
Sure.
As you go through. So we really, never were we again in a position where it was boom, 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 and we could see who we were shooting at. And most of us never even had to shoot anyone because we were clearing houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exposed to fire. I can remember crossing a bridge one time and a mortar shell plopped in the mud right next to the bank.
Didn't go off.
Wow. It hit the mud. Just went. But, you know, it was walk all day, ride all night, walk all day, ride all night. I've got six guys reporting to me, seven, eight. You mentioned, what do you do when you're in the middle of the street and you get caught? You lay down and you sweat. Or you get down in a doorway somewhere. This one particular incident where I was just 2-3 days out there someplace, and one guy said, hey, Conan, go out, Sergeant, go over there, Wally, something's matter with Wally. So I look around, here's Wally laying in the middle of the street, shaking like a leaf. I run up to him, he says, if I get out of this alive, my kid's going to Sunday school every Sunday. If I get out of this alive, my kid's going to Sunday school every Sunday. So this 19-year-old philosopher that I am, you know, with all this training I've had, I say, here, have a cigarette. I had to get him calmed down and get him out of the middle of the street.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just funny stories like that that come back and haunt you.
And what was it, do you think, that enabled you to avoid those moments of panic where it's just so consuming that these guys couldn't function and couldn't move on?
I don't know. You survive. You look for a place to survive is what you do. Mm-hmm. And so I say you get down next to the curb. That's all that's there. You get a chance then, when it's not something coming at you, you quit getting to the doorway of the house next door or a hole that you see someplace next door. If you're in the country, it's down in a ditch.
You mentioned that mortar shell that lands in the mud next to you. I don't want to assume something that's not true, but it sounds like had that mud been a little harder, you wouldn't be here.
It would have gone off, yeah.
And it would have killed you.
Yeah, but I realize that now, but then I'm lucky.
Yeah, no big deal.
It spurred me on. I ran a little bit faster.
How exhausting was it?
That's one of the things that, I'm going to talk to you later about some other thing, but that's sure. One of the things is you're dead tired all the time. And so when you go to sleep, you sleep. And if the sleep is 2 hours or 6 hours, you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you've never been so tired as you are. And yet you can run just as fast as you ever run. And you can get around just, and you can yell and everything else just as fast. You've got a lot of junk hanging on you. You know, you got food and canteen and all that stuff, but you can get it out of the way to run. You're invincible. You're only 19 years old.
That never wavered for you, huh?
No.
All right.
You know where you go for everywhere. You worry about your own protection. You worry about your guy's protection. You look at the ditch. You make sure you got a spot to jump to, but you don't worry it's ever going to hit you. You don't do that. I take pride in being a soldier in World War II. I do take pride. I stand straight on that. I was lucky, very fortunate. And if I really want to get mundane about it, I can say I was saved to do something. But I can, I have had a very good life. Had 4 beautiful children, wonderful wife. Went to school, got an education, ran food plants for General Foods all around the country. And so, you know, that was my want in life. I'm very proud of what I did. Yeah, from that standpoint.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Is that something you think God was protecting you?
Yes, very definitely. He had something planned. He usually doesn't tell you what he's going to do.
It's time for our final break, but when we come back, a story that's sure to add a little perspective as you gather with your family for a holiday feast this weekend. What if you had to spend Easter in a prisoner of war camp? For those who celebrate it, this particular holiday is all about hope and freedom. And you may see those two words in a whole new way after hearing this next account. Our special Easter weekend edition of Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.